The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
Are you looking to hit your fitness goals? Let Beachbody On Demand help you get there. No need to go to a gym or schedule a class. Everything is right there on your personal device. They have programs for any fitness level, and the workouts range from cardio to weight training to yoga, low impact, and even dance. There are over 600 different workouts on the platform. Beachbody On Demand even provides comprehensive nutrition plans to help you meet your goals, because working out is just part of the equation. Access to information on meal prep, variety of recipes, and simple but proven eating plans. You need to give this service a try. Right now, listeners can get a free trial membership when you text FTN to 303030. You will get full access to this entire platform for free. All the workouts and nutrition information free. Just text FTN to 303030. Text FTN to 303030.
This is the CBS News Weekend Roundup. New developments in the Russia probe.
When President Trump could face the special counsel.
The president's pitch to the World Economic Forum.
There has never been a better time to hire, to build, to invest, and to grow in the United States.
Later,
scientists at the Chinese Academy of Sciences in Shanghai have now cloned a primate for the very first time.
I'm Steve Dorsey at the CBS News Washington Bureau. Let's start this weekend with the Russia probe from the White House's correspondent Stephen Portnoy. Stephen, the New York Times reports President Trump ordered Special Counsel Robert Mueller fired 6 months ago. What happened?
The news that was so jaw-dropping on Thursday night was the report that the president actually instructed his White House counsel, Don McGahn, to carry out the firing of Robert Mueller, something that, according to the New York Times, McGahn refused to do and then even threatened to quit over it.
We're also learning more about the text, Stephen, exchange between two FBI employees. Tell us about that, and how does that impact the probe?
Well, this is a story that Republicans have been trying to draw a great deal of attention to. This involves two FBI officials. One is an agent named Peter Strzok, who worked not only on the Clinton email investigation, but for a time was part of Robert Mueller's probe as an investigator, and his mistress, a woman named Lisa Page, a lawyer for the FBI. Well, according to texts that have been unearthed and distributed up on Capitol Hill, not only were these two having an affair, but they were exchanging negative messages about then-candidate Donald Trump through 2016. And Republicans have said that this is evidence of bias in not only the Russia probe, but also perhaps the Clinton email investigation. In the last week, a major story has been that the FBI was unable to find several months' worth of text between these two. We learned by the end of the week that it wasn't just these two, but thousands of FBI devices that the FBI's system to capture text messages had a glitch. And so none of the text messages from a very wide period of time of almost a year were being collected. But then the Inspector General of the Justice Department reported that with the use of forensic tools, text messages from Lisa Page and Peter Strzok's phones were actually recovered and soon will be part of the Justice Department's own inquiry and then perhaps sent up to Capitol Hill as well.
When do we expect the president to talk to Mueller?
That could happen in just a matter of weeks. On Wednesday night, the president had a very brief but fiery exchange with reporters in which he said he's very eager to talk to the special counsel, that he's willing to do it under oath.
CBS News White House correspondent Stephen Portnoy. Thanks, Stephen.
You bet, Steve.
President Trump responded to the Russia probe reporting in the New York Times in Davos, Switzerland, Friday.
Fake news, folks. Fake news.
What's your message today?
Typical New York Times fake stories.
Mr. Trump spent his final day at the World Economic Forum trying to convince world leaders to invest in the U.S.
The president's first meeting of the day was one that looked to potentially be an awkward one. Just a couple of weeks after allegedly using a profanity to describe people from African nations, Mr. Trump held talks with Rwandan President Paul Kagame. Kagame is the incoming head of the African Union. The two, though, didn't hint at any discomfort.
It's an honor to have you as a friend. Thank you very much.
President Trump wrapped up his trip with a keynote address. The theme of the speech, that America is open for business.
There has never been a better time to hire, to build, to invest, and to grow in the United States.
Mr. Trump suggested his America First strategy doesn't equal isolationism, but rather his desire to negotiate more advantageous trade deals.
Just like the leaders of other countries should put their country first also.
The president also spoke of working together for common causes like defeating ISIS and discouraging North Korea's nuclear ambitions. Gavin Ramjorn, CBS News, London.
Jill Schlesinger is CBS News senior business analyst. Jill, how can a world leader trust the U.S. with a trade deal as the Trump administration considers terminating NAFTA?
Well, I think that that becomes a big issue. I think that there is a lot of cynicism around making a deal with this administration. On the other hand, what's the alternative? To not do it? I mean, I think that ideally these leaders would love to be able to sit down with Steve Mnuchin and Gary Cohn, bang out a deal, and have it slide under the president's pen for a signature without him realizing it. That's not going to happen. I think that's what they thought was going to happen when a lot of these announcements were made of appointees. That's clearly not the case. President Trump is mercurial. And so, you know, you're going to do the best you can to knock out a deal. On the other hand, you're going to really be watchful about maybe this thing could get torn up in a year.
Is this country still an attractive place for foreign investors?
Oh, sure. I mean, the U.S. is a great place because it's a huge market. And, you know, I think that a lot of these big countries are going to start to realize that if there is going to be more of a protectionist stand, they're going to say, hey, you know what, we will just open up an operation in the U.S. because the market is too big to just turn your back on it. I think the problem could come when you start to see new trade agreements that exclude the United States. So, yay, you, United States, you're not going to be part of TPP. Well, then we'll start our own version of TPP without you. And I think that actually is not good for the United States. Look, we do want there to be fair rules on trade. We do want that to occur. However, we don't want to close ourselves in and start ripping deals up that would disrupt the supply chain that is already intact. So I think that we have a very good, strong economy right now. We have a very positive backdrop for corporate tax rates. We still have low interest rates in the United States. And anyone who's exporting stuff or goods wants to be in this market. So they're not going to be able to just say, we don't want to do business with the U.S. Everyone does want to do business with the U.S.
CBS News senior business analyst Jill Schlesinger on the Weekend Roundup. Thanks, Jill.
Thank you.
Now to immigration. The White House is proposing a framework of an agreement on immigration reform it calls bipartisan. It follows a commitment from Republican leaders in the Senate to address immigration reform after the government shutdown ended Monday.
The White House framework would put 1.8 million immigrants brought to America illegally by their parents, or so-called dreamers, on a path to citizenship if they meet certain requirements like work, education, and good moral character. In exchange, the White House wants $30 billion in border security funding, $25 billion of that for the wall. Senator Lindsey Graham is calling it an encouraging sign.
We're trying to find a way to have strong border security.
But some Democrats are not encouraged, accusing Mr. Trump of holding dreamers hostage.
I'm willing to be reasonable and flexible and provide for much enhanced border security and other steps, but there are limits.
The president's plan is designed to win 60 Senate votes and break a potential filibuster that could trigger another government shutdown next month. Anna Doba, CBS News.
The plan also scales back the diversity visa lottery system and limits legal immigration through family ties. Still to come, a disgraced former USA gymnastics doctor learns his fate. That's next on the Weekend Roundup. On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. Former USA Olympics doctor Larry Nassar is expected to spend the rest of his life behind bars after more than 150 women and girls came forward in a Michigan courtroom saying he molested people under the guise of medical treatment. More from CBS News chief medical correspondent Dr. John LaPook.
I've just signed your death warrant.
After 156 victims had addressed their abuser, Judge Rosemarie Aquilina got her turn.
Your decision to assault was precise, calculated, manipulative.
Before Aquilina imposed the sentence, Larry Nassar addressed her and his victims.
There are no words that can describe the depth and breadth of how sorry I am for what has occurred.
Judge Aquilina did not buy Nassar's apology, reading aloud parts of the letter he had written to her last week.
What I did in the state cases was medical, not sexual. The media convinced them that everything I did was wrong and bad. They feel I broke their trust. Hell hath no fury like a woman scorned. Oh.
The judge told Nassar his treatments were not medical and reminded him he had admitted wrongdoing in his plea deal.
Because you are guilty, aren't you?
As the procession of victims came to a close, Rachel Denhollander called for the maximum sentence.
So I ask, how much is a little girl worth? I submit to you that these children are worth everything.
She was the first to publicly accuse Nassar of sexual abuse in a 2016 Indianapolis Star article.
You started the tidal wave. You are the bravest person I have ever had in my courtroom.
Kaylee Lorenz says she was only 13 years old when Nassar first abused her.
You need to look at me and listen. I only hope that when you get a chance to speak, you tell us who knew what and when they knew it.
Dr. John LaPook, CBS News, New York.
Bill Cosby's defense team says sex assault charges should be thrown out before a retrial begins in 2 months because prosecutors can't prove the alleged encounter happened within the statute of limitations. More from KYW reporter Jim Melwert.
Based on statute of limitations and on testimony from his accuser, Cosby's defense team argues the incident would have had to have happened between December 30th, 2003 and January 20th, 2004. But their latest filing uses phone records, travel itineraries, Cosby's performance logs, and his accuser's expense reports to rule out each day. Andrea Constand says Cosby drugged her and molested her while she was incapacitated at a suburban Philadelphia home. A mistrial was declared last June after a jury deadlocked. The retrial is scheduled to start April 2nd. Jim Melwert for CBS News, Norristown, Pennsylvania.
A new TSA emergency order puts more restrictions on air cargo from 5 mostly Muslim countries, including Egypt and Saudi Arabia. More from CBS News transportation correspondent Chris Van Cleve.
The emergency order applies to nonstop cargo and passenger flights to the United States by 6 airlines from 7 airports in countries where the TSA says there has been demonstrated intent by terrorist groups to attack aviation. All cargo is screened before flight, but these airlines will now have to provide the TSA and Customs with additional detailed information before any shipments may be loaded on a plane bound for the U.S. Details like where a package is coming from, who sent it, how it was sent, where it has been since it was mailed, where it's going, and its contents. Information shipping companies like FedEx can typically provide with ease. This order also gives TSA and Customs time and authority to require an airline to do further screening if something appears amiss. The goal is anomaly detection, spotting shipments that are out of the ordinary.
The anomaly they're looking for is the $100 computer printer that you're going to spend $500 to ship doesn't make sense.
CBS News senior national security analyst Fran Townsend was the Homeland Security advisor to President George W. Bush.
Reading between the lines here, it sounds like there is at least some reason to be concerned enough to implement new procedures.
You don't put an emergency order in unless you have real-time information suggesting that there is a current threat.
The order reflects continued concern about bombs hidden in large electronic devices that may get past some screening equipment, and comes on the heels of a failed terrorist plot to bring down an Australian airliner last summer. A military-grade explosive shipped from Turkey was discovered before it could be detonated. The TSA says there is no new threat, but, quote, amplifying information out of the Australia incident when coupled with existing so-called threat streams of intelligence led to this emergency order. Chris Van Cleve, CBS News, Washington Dulles International Airport.
The opioid crisis is putting pharmaceutical companies under new scrutiny. 13 states have filed a lawsuit against the pharmaceutical industry, but now that industry is pushing back.
Now I can enjoy every day that I live. I can really enjoy myself.
That was the message to 15,000 doctors in 1998 from Purdue Pharma, the company that made $35 billion from the sales of the painkiller OxyContin.
The rate of addiction amongst pain patients who are treated by doctors is much less than 1%.
The company says it corrected its marketing and pled guilty to misbranding in 2007. But Ohio's Attorney General Mike DeWine says the company continued deceptive marketing through 2014.
If you go back 20 years in Ohio, you can see
the number of pain meds prescribed in Ohio start going up like that.
Last May, DeWine sued Purdue and four other pharmaceutical manufacturers.
I would love for Purdue Pharma and these other drug companies to follow me around just one day. Give me one day, and I'll show you what you have done to the people in the state of Ohio.
Purdue recently tried to persuade DeWine to drop Ohio's lawsuit and negotiate instead, writing, "Litigation takes years, and the costs for both sides are significant."
There's a lot at stake for them. And so they've been very aggressive. They've lawyered up. They have hired lobbyists.
And they've opened their war chests. Donations from drug companies to political associations for state AGs have risen in the past 3 years, totaling almost $700,000 to Democrats and over $1.7 million to Republicans. Professor Paul Nolet studies state government.
So you have some of the very companies that have manufactured opioids are either under active investigation or potentially under investigation, donating tens of thousands, even hundreds of thousands of dollars to these AG organizations.
The Republican AG Association told us they have an obligation to the people to hear from all sides. Their Democratic counterpart said they also hear from a wide variety of voices. The contributions are legal, but they allow companies to gain access to the AGs at exclusive meetings, golf outings, and high-end dinners. Opioid manufacturers and distributors spent over $100,000 to partially sponsor this meeting in San Francisco.
Well, that was really something else, the opening dinner last night.
And at a meeting in May, two opioid companies who had given the Democratic AG Association a combined $65,000 got to speak on a panel at this hotel in Oregon and told a group that they were not responsible for the opioid crisis, according to several attendees.
Correspondent Juliana Goldman reporting from Washington. Up next, the doomsday clock moves closer to midnight.
The very real threats of nuclear war and climate change are not being dealt with seriously at the same time.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
Don't have time to keep up with the news? Try the CBS News Radio app on your iOS or Android device. You'll get the latest news as soon as you start it up. It's that easy. You can also listen to great programming like Face the Nation, Weekend Roundup, or the CBS Evening News.
And good evening. Wall Street today signaled its approval of the tax cuts passed by the Republican-controlled Congress.
You can even download them straight to your phone and listen later. It's all on the CBS News Radio app for iOS or Android. Download it today.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. The State Department confirms four Americans were killed during a Taliban siege on a Kabul, Afghanistan hotel. More from correspondent David Martin at the Pentagon.
Eyewitnesses said six Taliban fighters roamed the halls of the Intercontinental Hotel looking for foreigners to kill. Some guests escaped over balconies while others hid under beds or in bathtubs. It took nearly 14 hours for Afghan commandos to take back the hotel, and by then, 22 were dead, many more wounded.
The Taliban has claimed responsibility. We don't have any proof of that yet.
Nearly 7 years ago, the Taliban claimed responsibility for a similar attack on the Intercontinental, which left at least 21 dead. More recently, 41 people were killed last month in the bombing of a cultural center and 150 in a truck bombing last May. After 16 years of war and 2,400 American combat deaths, the Afghan capital is so unsafe, visitors have to take a helicopter from the airport to the U.S. Embassy, and the blast walls around the city keep getting higher and higher.
It's a country at war, and it's a capital that is under attack.
General John Nicholson, the top American commander in Afghanistan, told Lara Logan of 60 Minutes, the new U.S. strategy relies on Afghan ground troops to do the fighting, backed up by American advisors and airstrikes. There are currently about 13,000 U.S. troops in Afghanistan, and Nicholson said there are no plans for any major increases.
This is it, right? I mean, there's no more. This is the end game.
Yes, this is the end game. This is a policy that can deliver a win.
A win means forcing the Taliban to negotiate an end to the fighting, and Nicholson estimates it will take 2 years for the new strategy to produce results.
More threats of instability in the Mideast, this time with Turkey at the helm. More from CBS's Holly Williams.
These Kurdish fighters, America's closest partners in the battle against ISIS in Syria, are now facing off with Turkey, America's NATO ally. A deadly new front in the blood-soaked hills of northern Syria. The Turkish government is furious with the US for arming the Kurds in Syria. It says they're controlled by a Kurdish terror organization. The Turkish president, Recep Tayyip Erdogan, fears weapons supplied by the US will end up being used against his country. And on Sunday, he sent tanks across the frontier. So far, limiting Turkey's attacks to Afrin, but threatening to do the same in Manbij, which could bring them close to American personnel. In Raqqa last year, then the so-called ISIS capital in Syria, we witnessed the Kurds fight bravely against the extremists, helping to drive them out of the city. The US has built bases on Kurdish-controlled territory and coordinated airstrikes. But the last straw for Turkey seems to have come this month when the US announced they'd form a 30,000-strong border force. The US later backpedaled on the border force, with Secretary of State Rex Tillerson saying, quote, some people misspoke. But that's done little to mollify Turkey, a sometimes difficult but crucially important American ally. Holly Williams, CBS News, Antakya, near the Turkey-Syria border.
Closer to home, a Kentucky high school is mourning the deaths of two students killed in a shooting.
I played baseball with him for 3 or 4 years. And
Jacob Landis says the locker room will never be the same without Preston Ryan Cope.
He's an incredible kid. I mean, every time you saw him, he was smiling. He was walking down the hallway. He never had anything negative to say.
15-year-old Bailey Nicole Holt died at the scene. Her mother described her as a perfect, sweet soul and called the tragedy unbearable for our family.
Everybody just froze and didn't know what to do.
Keaton Gamble says students were socializing in the commons area of the school when shots silenced the crowd.
Nobody knew what it was at first, and then you saw the boy with the gun after everybody dropped. Some teachers were pulling kids into rooms, and then they were crawling out the windows of classrooms. A full classroom of kids crawled out the window, just trying to get away from the school.
Keaton tells us two of her friends were injured. One shot, the other suffered a concussion from being trampled during the commotion. Students from Marshall County High joined others from a nearby school for a prayer service and vigil. Gamble says the community will heal as a family.
Everybody is just so loving to each other, and they want to make sure you're okay and be by your side through anything.
The high school here in Marshall County remains closed as students meet with grief counselors. They were supposed to have their homecoming game on Friday. Adriana Diaz, CBS News, Benton, Kentucky.
We're closer to doomsday, according to scientist activists.
I'm Peter King. The Bulletin of Atomic Scientists has moved the clock to 2 minutes to midnight because of two issues. Arizona State University's Lawrence Krauss.
The very real threats of nuclear war and climate change are not being dealt with seriously at the same time.
The nuclear issues involve a lack of diplomacy and President Trump's inflammatory tweets. The climate issues primarily involve the Trump administration's view that climate change is a hoax. Stockholm Environmental Institute scientist Shivan Kartha says that hasn't undermined the global effort to slow it down.
Other countries reaffirmed their commitment to global climate cooperation and acknowledged that more must be done, not less.
Peter King, CBS News.
Another glass ceiling shattered. Here's CBS News reporter Larry Miller.
For the first time in its 800-year history, Oxford University has offered more places to women than men. In the incoming class, females will outnumber males by 110 students. Oxford opened its doors to women in 1878, but they could not become full-fledged members of the university until 1920. However, the data also reveals a massive gap on the economic scale. More than 1,300 incoming students are from wealthier backgrounds, while just 105 came from the poorest homes. Larry Miller, CBS News, London.
A record-setting teen takes on trolls. More from reporter Scott Maiman in Brisbane, Australia.
In 2016, at age 14, Jade Highmeister became the youngest person to ski to the North Pole. Now at 16, she's just done the same thing, this time at the South Pole. But she's taken it further with a swipe at online bullies, the men who've trolled women on social media, telling them to make me a sandwich. So she did. In a cheeky post, she's told the men their ham and cheese sandwich is waiting for them at the South Pole. Scott Maiman for CBS News, Brisbane, Australia.
Britain's royal family is now planning for another wedding. as correspondent Vicky Barker reports from London.
Meghan Markle will still be writing wedding present thank you notes, with help, one hopes, from Prince Harry, when church bells ring for the next royal wedding.
We are overjoyed at the news today that Eugenie and Jack have got engaged.
Prince Andrew, Queen Elizabeth's second son, on word that his 27-year-old younger daughter is marrying London nightclub manager Jack Brooksbank. The pair met skiing in Verbier, as one does. They've been together 7 years. The wedding's planned for sometime next fall. Vicky Barker, CBS News, London.
Coming up on the Weekend Roundup, Elton John singing a new tune at home.
I just don't want to travel anymore.
Follow us on Twitter. We've got headlines at CBS News Radio, and I'm tweeting at Steve_Dorsey on the CBS News Weekend Roundup. On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. Elton John retiring from the road. More from the BBC's Nick Bryant in New York.
Elton John used a virtual reality show of previous performances to announce that he doesn't want to do the real thing anymore. After almost 50 years of performing around the world, he's finally decided where his future lies. And it's away from departure lounges, immigration halls, and the 180 flights a year.
I'd buy a big house where we both could live.
He wants to spend more time with his family.
I've never had that before. I've never had children, and it's changed my life. I just love them so much, and I just love being with them, and I don't like leaving them behind. And they, whenever we go, or I go, they said, please, Daddy, don't go. And then I just FaceTime them now, and I said, oh, we just announced the last tour. Good. Then you'll be here. I said, yes, I'll be here.
This ultimate piano man still clearly loves performing and will continue to release records. But he's 70 years old and has clocked up more than 4,000 concerts in 75 countries.
Enough. I just don't want to travel anymore. I've been traveling since I was 17 in the back of a van up and down the M1. And although I travel in the most fantastic way, it's exhausting and I don't enjoy it.
It's a long goodbye.
It's a long goodbye.
3 years.
It's a 3-year tour, 300 shows. But I'm really, really looking forward to it. And they will be happy shows. I won't regret it. And I just want to give my fans the best farewell possible.
No chance of a change of mind.
No.
So in 3 years' time, it really will be goodbye, Yellow Brick Road. Rocket Man. But the former pub pianist who gave the world Rocket Man has promised he'll go out with a bang. Nick Bryant, BBC News, New York.
Also leaving life on the road behind Neil Diamond, but for another reason, as CBS's Vladimir Dutier reports.
After 5 decades of playing to a crowd, Neil Diamond says he will no longer tour because of the neurological disorder Parkinson's disease. On his personal website, Diamond wrote, "It is with great reluctance and disappointment that I announce my retirement."
They come to America.
In 2014, Diamond explained the demands of a live show.
The performing thing is tedious, and there are a lot of hard things about it. It's fearsome and scary and joyful and delicious all at the same time.
Michael Wood writes about pop music for the LA Times.
You kind of have to respect him for knowing that he is unable to give fans the level of performance that they've become accustomed to.
Despite his diagnosis, Diamond says he plans to keep writing and making records.
Sweet Caroline.
I think there is a touch of God in that song.
Diamond wrote to his fans Monday, "This ride has been so good, so good, so good, thanks to you."
Race and politics a focus for music honored in Sunday night's Grammy Awards on CBS.
The Grammy Awards this year, a dream fulfilled.
You know, at a time of Black Lives Matter and the kind of cultural and political issues that are on the table, you know, hip-hop has historically, you know, been a forefront of where those issues get battled out.
Fast from a day job, running fast from the way it was, jump quick to a great job.
music.
Anthony DeCurtis, contributing editor, Rolling Stone.
People tend to remember them as being like extremely staid and safe forever, but I think there's pockets of time when they have embraced their role in culture changing a little bit more than others, and I think now is one of those moments again.
Jillian Mapes, Pitchfork Productions.
Correspondent Jim Taylor. Now to the year's Oscar nominations.
Silent as a grave.
Guillermo del Toro's fantasy drama The Shape of Water earned a leading 13 Academy Award nominations, including Best Picture and Best Director nods.
Right now, there ain't too much more we can do.
It will compete against Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri, which took home 7 nominations, including an acting nod for Frances McDormand. The other Best Picture nominees are Call Me By Your Name, Darkest Hour, Dunkirk, Get Out, Lady Bird, Phantom Thread, and The Post.
My name is Lady Bird.
Well, actually, it's not.
The semi-autobiographical Lady Bird earned writer-director Greta Gerwig 2 nominations. She becomes only the 5th woman ever to be nominated for Best Director. She will face Dunkirk's Christopher Nolan, Get Out's Jordan Peele, Phantom Thread's Paul Thomas Anderson, and Del Toro.
I can't move.
Get Out, a horror satire about race, also took home a nomination for star Daniel Kaluuya. He goes up against Call Me By Your Name's Timothy Chalamet, Phantom Thread's Daniel Day-Lewis, Darkest Hour's Gary Oldman, and in a surprise, Denzel Washington for Roman J. Israel Esquire. Many wonder if he got the spot that would have gone to the disaster artist James Franco if allegations of sexual misconduct hadn't surfaced against him.
What do you think we do here for a living, kid?
Another snub. Tom Hanks and Steven Spielberg failed to score for The Post, although the newspaper drama did pick up a Best Picture nomination and a lead actress nod for star Meryl Streep. Danielle Nottingham, CBS News, Los Angeles.
Of those Oscar noms, a salute to 6-year-old English girl Maisie Sly. Correspondent Jonathan Vigliotti reports from London on why she's so special.
Here are the nominees for Best Live Action Short Film. The Silent Child.
The Silent Child, the short film Maisie stars in, has made it all the way from the English countryside to Hollywood, where you won't find many starring roles like hers.
How do you feel?
I feel excited, nervous, and proud.
Maisie was born deaf and can only communicate through sign language.
What's the message that you hope to convey?
That deaf children can do everything.
She gets her confidence from her parents and siblings, who were all born deaf. But it's estimated that 90% of deaf children have parents who can hear and can't communicate with them. It's that child that Maisie brings to life as the character Libby.
She came into the audition room and blew us all away.
Rachel Shenton, whose own father lost his hearing, wrote the screenplay and plays the social worker who gives Libby a voice through sign.
I hope we raise awareness for a subject that isn't talked about enough. And I also hope that it shines a much needed light on access to education for deaf children.
Maisie's school has already rolled out the red carpet. Now she's getting ready for the most celebrated one.
What are you most looking forward to doing at the ceremony?
I'm actually excited to have pancakes.
Pancakes.
She may not say a single word in her breakout performance, but acting is about more than just words. Jonathan Vigliotti, CBS News, London.
Coming up, new concerns about this year's flu.
So far this season, the virus has killed more than 30 children in at least 23 states.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
Like what you're hearing? Get even more great content from CBS News Radio podcasts. Listen to TV broadcasts like CBS Evening News and Face the Nation on demand.
I'm John Dickerson.
And don't miss The Takeout, a politics, policy, and pop culture podcast from CBS News Chief White House Correspondent Major Garrett.
We have our first member of the Trump administration cabinet at our table, Mick Mulvaney.
Well, you asked the wrong people first.
Subscribe now at Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or Google Play.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, I'm Steve Dorsey. Illinois veteran Democratic Senator Tammy Duckworth, who lost both her legs in combat in Iraq, has announced she's pregnant.
Only 10 members of Congress have given birth in office, including Tammy Duckworth, who gave birth to her first child, Abigail, while a member of the House in 2014. Now the Illinois Democrat is in the Senate, and she will become the first sitting senator to give birth. Duckworth and her husband, Brian Bowlesby, are expecting their second child in April. The 49-year-old Duckworth tells the Chicago Sun-Times she feels great, and she's grateful for the pregnancy.
Correspondent Bill Rakoff reporting from Washington. Now to a breakthrough in science. Researchers have successfully cloned two monkeys.
Scientists at the Chinese Academy of Sciences in Shanghai have now cloned a primate for the very first time. Dieter Egli is a researcher at Columbia University.
I'm really astonished that they were able to make this happen.
What makes it so astonishing?
More than 20 years, we knew that you could clone sheep and horses and cats. But despite several attempts, everybody failed when cloning monkeys.
The Chinese scientists say the goal is to create genetically identical monkeys to use in medical research, especially in the battle against Alzheimer's and Parkinson's, and that they have no intention of one day cloning humans. Marcy Darnovsky runs the Center for Genetics and Society in Berkeley, California.
So more than 60 countries and 15 states in the U.S. actually have laws on the books saying that human reproductive cloning is illegal.
The People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals didn't waste any time condemning the development. Quote, cloning is a horror show, said PETA's Kathy Guillermo. A waste of lives, time, and money. Jim Axelrod, CBS News, New York.
New concerns about the flu. Here's Dr. Tara Narula.
It was an aggressive form of the flu.
The parents of 12-year-old Dylan Winnick are pleading for other parents to treat this season's flu epidemic seriously. His mother's partner, Mike Medwin, can't believe the virus could take Dylan away.
You shrug your shoulders. No way. We're healthy.
Investigators are performing an autopsy to determine Dylan's exact cause of death. He reportedly did not have a flu shot. His brother, Sebastian, says Dylan was healthy and enjoyed playing outside.
No family should feel the same pain that we're going through right now.
While states are not required to report flu deaths in adults to federal health officials, they are required to report flu deaths in children. Over the past decade, flu-related pediatric deaths have ranged from a low of 37 between 2011 and 2012 to a high of 288 between 2009 and 2010. So far this season, the virus has killed more than 30 children in at least 23 states. Rachel Orschlin is an assistant professor of pediatrics at Washington University School of Medicine in St. Louis.
It's difficult to predict what will happen with the curve of influenza. We certainly are seeing a high peak right now, and we don't know if we're going to be on the way down from that in terms of the number of cases or if it's going to continue to be transmitted at a high level.
It's especially important to take steps to prevent and treat the flu because it can create further health complications. A study published in the New England Journal of Medicine this week discovered that people with the flu, especially the elderly, are six times more likely to have a heart attack during the week after being diagnosed with the virus than those who aren't. Dr. Tara Narula, CBS News, New York.
A cold case finally warms up after 60 years. 48 Hours correspondent Richard Schlesinger reports this weekend on Sins of a Father. Richard joins us from New York. Richard, how does the story of Irene Garza and her accused killer, Father John Fite, begin?
It began in 1960 when Irene Garza went missing on Easter weekend after going to confession. And it's, believe it or not, it has taken 60 years to get this case, almost 60 years, to get this case to court. And the way it unfolds is pretty dramatic.
Well, how does it unfold?
Well, they had to piece together evidence, you know, that's decades old. People had to have, you know, they had to remember accurately. They had to find new witnesses. And this is a case that other prosecutors had refused to take. The family, Irene Garza's family, has been sort of sticking with this and fighting for this trial for all this time.
What can you tell us about this man, Father John Fite?
Well, he was a visiting priest at the time in McAllen, Texas, and was hearing confessions on Easter Saturday, the Saturday of Easter weekend, when Irene Garza went in to confess to him, and was never seen alive again. So people started looking into his background, and there were other weird incidents with other women leading up to this murder. He was always a suspect. All these years, he was a suspect. But it took close to, you know, 60 years to arrest him.
What was the impetus for his arrest then?
Well, for about 32 years, actually for exactly 32 years, the district attorney, who was the same guy, refused to take this case. What really broke this open was he ran for re-election and lost. New DA comes in, says he wants to look at this case, and decided to charge Father Fite.
48 Hours correspondent Richard Schlesinger. You can watch 48 Hours on Saturday nights on the CBS TV network or stream it anytime on CBS All Access. Thanks, Richard.
Thanks.
Finally this weekend, bar trivia enters the 21st century.
That's the countdown to HQ Trivia, heard every weekday at 3 and 9 p.m. Eastern. Contestants just need a smartphone to play.
These are not Googleable answers.
Questions have to be answered in 10 seconds or less. Winners who get through all 12 levels split a cash prize. Russ Yusupov is HQ Trivia's co-founder and CEO.
Folks get on their phones to play, but they start interacting with each other. That's everything we could have hoped for in making a mobile game.
It's so popular, people are playing at work, or in Ethan Muchnick's case, during math class.
My teacher found out about it, like she caught on, and now she made a rule, like no going out of class after 3 o'clock.
You gotta hike up your smarty pants, strap on your thinking caps.
Host Scott Rogowski is a big draw.
You are so quick, you come up with so many jokes. Is that on the fly, or is that a little bit premeditated?
I write them on the palm of my hand.
And then you just sweat them off during the game?
They're all sweated off. Yeah, no, it's a mix of both.
A writing team handles the questions, revising and fact-checking up to the minute the show goes live. Yusupov sees the tune-in or miss-out factor as a big part of HQ's success.
Do you think you're going to put Jeopardy out of business?
We love Jeopardy. I grew up watching Jeopardy, and we hope to build something that also achieves that kind of level of popularity.
So will you guys keep playing until you win?
Yes.
Math class may have to wait, but Ethan could learn something playing HQ Trivia. Laura Podesta, CBS News, New York.
That does it for the weekend roundup. Thanks for listening. The show's always online on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, and Spotify. We want to get your feedback. Drop us a line at weekendroundup@cbsnews.com and let us know where and how you're listening. The Weekend Roundup is produced at the CBS News Washington Bureau. Lou Walker is the technical supervisor. Mitchell Fallon is our intern. Have a great week. I'm Steve Dorsey, CBS News.